This is an interview with Moira and Amy Jane Budge about the South Ronaldsay Festival of the Horse and Boys Ploughing Match, recorded by Zaina Farouk and Julia Letts.
So this is Julia Letts, and I'm doing an interview for Making Mischief with Zaina Farouk, and it's the 28th of June 2023, and we're talking to Moira Budge and Amy Jane. We are going to be talking to them about their experiences of the Orkney Festival of the Horse. And Moira, I'm going to start with you and get you to describe for me, if you would, where you are and what it's like there.
Okay, well, South Ronaldsay is one of the southmost parts of the Orkney Islands. It is probably about 6 miles north of Scotland. And we are one of the only places now that does the boys ploughing match.
Okay, so tell me what you mean by the boys ploughing match, imagining that I've never heard of it.
Okay, well, we don't know when the boys ploughing match started, but it would have followed the tradition of the farmers who would have ploughed with their Clydesdale horses. And as little boys do, they want to copy what their dads are doing. And they would just have had it's said they had a stick in the ground with a cow's hoof. If you know the cloven hoof is the one side is a bit like a plough. And they would have used that into the end of a field that had maybe potatoes or something in it, where it was a bit silty after the rain. And, they did that. So obviously they were showing interest, and they progressed from there. As I say, nobody knows when or how it did. And they then, I guess, improved their ploughs. They would have a wooden in some form that looked like the proper plough of the field, and it would have been maybe a bit of beaten metal, corrugated iron or something, just to make it a bit more easier for them. And then, of course, they had to pretend they had horses, so maybe a younger brother was roped into being the horse. Very little decoration, I believe, would ever have been put on. And, of course, in that day, it said it could be about 200 years old. They wouldn't have had anything really to decorate with, and their suit would have probably been their Sunday suit. And they might have had a bit of frills or something added to that, but obviously taken off then for the use on Sunday. But that's all we know as the start.
Okay, so can I ask you a bit more about that in terms of, firstly, what's the landscape like in South Ronaldsay? So you've mentioned the ploughing, and obviously there's farming going on there and potato fields or whatever, but what does it look like? What's the landscape look like?
It's quite fertile. It's very bad. Not a lot of trees. So the fields are quite open. It can be very windy in the winter, and we don't have an extreme climate. We don't get the extreme cold or extreme heat, so it's quite moderate. We get the benefit of the Gulf Stream coming past, so it's quite moderate in the, no extremes either way. Predominantly farming over the whole island, a bit of fishing as well, because there's farmers and fishermen. Some would do maybe a little bit of both, just to, help get a bit of money and feed the family, basically. So, yeah, that was probably Orkney.
So very much an agricultural-based society. And are we talking sort of very small communities or villages or towns? What sort of communities do you have on South Ronaldsay?
South Ronaldsay, I couldn't tell you what the population is at the present time, but being, I suppose quite remote, really. And obviously that many years ago, it would have been an island, which we now are not, because of the Churchill barriers. They link us to the mainland of Orkney. So in the days when it started, it would have been an island. So more isolated, but each area had its own school when they started. So I did hear a story that someone in the far south had never actually been in Kirkwall. even when the barrier was built. So, I mean, they didn't have the facilities to travel even within the island.
So would you say that then and now you're a community who are pretty good at, you know, being self-sufficient, and if you need something, you'll find a way to make it or get it?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, it was a make, do and mend, and obviously it was like that for probably everybody. It was, you know, hard times. And they were probably everybody, as you say, could make things whenever that was needed.
So give me a little bit of your background, Moira, because I believe that you weren't born on South Ronaldsay yourself.
No, I was born in the, well, the capital, Kirkwall, on the mainland. And only after I married, over 50 years ago now, that I came out to South Ronaldsay. My husband, he is more from these areas, so it was just by chance that we were able to buy a house here and get part of the community. So, yes, I'm an incomer.
So can you think back to when you first came to South Ronaldsay and first heard about or first went to your first Festival of the Horse?
Well, we had been out to see the event, which used to be on a Wednesday, and you know, we came specially to see it from Kirkwall when I was younger. And so I was aware of this event. And even when I first came here, we would go and see it, but I had no connection or, you know, nothing to do with it. But our son, he would have been, well, he was certainly at the primary school when our next door neighbour came along and said, oh, would he like to come and plough? And I says, well, we don't have a plough. We don't know anything about it, or, you know, oh, don't worry, she said, we can soon sort that out. So he was lent a plough and taught what to do, so he was a plough boy, and that was fine because it was all organized, you know, and we just attended, and that was, you know, the first sort of introduction to being part of the boys ploughing march.
Okay, I'm going to come back to that in a minute. Just want to take you back to when you first came and saw it when you were living in Kirkwall. Was this, what sort of age were you? What can you remember of coming to see it? It must have been a thing to come and see even back then.
Yeah, well, yes, it was. It probably wasn't quite so touristy. I mean, as I say, it was a Wednesday that it took, you know, they always had it on a Wednesday during the school holidays, obviously. And I did rather feel it was a very unique, special thing to South Ronaldsay. And I didn't know anything about, you know, the ploughing or what on earth they were even doing or why they were doing it. But I mean, to see the horses, and there was boys, quite a few boys taking part then, as horses. So yeah, it was really beautiful, which is probably what, you know, takes your eye to begin with.
And then going on to when your son first got involved, you first approached. So up until that point, had you not been involved? Although you were living on South Ronaldsay, you hadn't been involved particularly with the ceremony.
No involvement at all, other than if I could go and see it. Because, well, actually, I couldn't drive when I first came here. So unless I sort of went along with somebody that could take me, that was, say, you know, it wasn't a thing we went to every year. But, you know, as often as we could, we did. But yeah, it was only when he started taking part in the ploughing did we actually become involved in the event, and it was moved then to on a Saturday. So it was much easier, you know, and it became more sort of maybe more for people to come and see, being a Saturday at the weekend.
What sort of date was that, Moira?
I actually looked at the, can you remember what it moved? We have cuttings. Somebody did cuttings from the local paper, and it was also held in the springtime, which, needless to say, is not best weather. So it wasn't something that you made a big effort to go and see. And I think it was snowed off a couple of times, and it was then decided that, you know, let's do this at a better time of the year. So, yeah, it's had a few moves in its time, but it obviously stopped during the war. I think both wars actually was, you know, obviously stopped. So it was after the second war that the local banker who was in the Hope here sort of got together with some of the other ones that had been involved and started it. And that was when it sort of became Festival of the Horse. That was kind of rebranded, I suppose would be the terminology now, but it was always South Ronaldsea Boys Ploughing March.
So it actually changed name and was renamed Festival of the Horse.
It kind of got tagged on, Boys Ploughing March and Festival of the Horse. So it, as I said, it got rebranded slightly and made more, you know, attractive for tourists and, well, everybody to come and see it. So, yeah, there's been changes over the years, but as I said, that all happened before I had any involvement in it.
And where does it take place? You've mentioned that you had to drive to get there. So where does it always take place in the same place? And where is that?
Well, there used to be several events. Then, in fact, I again just read today that there was two areas had the combined ploughing march just a couple of days before what they call the island one. Now, I think it sort of went with each area had a school. So they must have kind of organised it, you know, with the school. Unless you count the South Parish, which is the area right on the south, which didn't really have a beach. They only ever had one event and it was ploughed in the field. So, each sort of school area, I think, organised a march because, as I said, travelling wasn't easier, you know, for everybody in that day. So when it actually went to be the one may have been when the schools, you know, got amalgamated to just be in the one school in the whole island. But they did certainly, I read today, which I obviously had never noticed before, they had an event few days before the main event, so I reckon they'd been having a little practice.
So when your son first got involved, what date was that? And was that when there was just one school for the whole island?
Yes, there was just the one school then. It was just the one event then. It would have been in the 80s or late 70s. Again, I should have actually looked up the dates for that. But would have been probably late 70s, early 80s, whenever he started. He was born in 72, so he'd have been 5, 6, 7, 8, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
Still in primary school.
What did he wear and what did he do on that first occasion?
There was no sort of dress for the boys. It was just obviously rubber boots because you're on the beach and it's wet. anything like jeans or or worse, overcoats and rainwear. But it was just, you know, whatever was convenient at the time to take part. There was no dress at that time. There was one or two then did have their bib and brace boiler suit and a cap, which was really nice, but it never really took on that the boys dressed as such.
And so was there anybody dressed up at all when you first started going with your son?
No, they never really seemed to have anything for the plough boys. I suppose the shine was the horses anyway. But that was just whatever, you know, was convenient, as I say, rubber boots, welly boots for the beach and something warm.
And so when he first went, were there others? So you mentioned younger brothers, but, you know, possibly also girls dressed up as the horses.
It was mainly boys all boys that was the horses until around 1954, when there was quite a few girls took part as horses. It was the first recording of the girls having taken part as horses. Now, when we did make a video, 2000 was it? We did quite a few interviews just to, you know, to get a bit of story to it. And I spoke to one woman who said, oh yes, she says, I remember being a horse. They didn't obviously have a Sunday suit, so it was just, you know, a collar literally a lace collar tied round her neck, and oh my, she says it was starch and it would scratch. And she says, I hated it. But it was just the token sort of horse that was there. And then I think they did have the collar, you know, the collar with the metal points on it. That was when I think they started maybe taking it a bit more seriously, but it was still very basic decoration on the boy's suit. I think I maybe mentioned that one family was a son of a baker, so they used cake frills, you know, the paper cake frills around his ankles or shorts, if it was the bottom of the shorts, and the sleeves, which kind of gives you the idea that it's like the Clydesdale horse with a feathering over the feet. So that was that kind of touch to the horse. And the collar, as I say, with the decorations, ribbons and whatever, you know, that they could get to put on. And I suppose once you kind of were maybe a little better off that you didn't have to keep the Sunday suit, decorations were added to it and left. And they got more elaborate and more elaborate. And as I said, we were talking about this, I think it was more a competition between the women to see who could make the best outfit as much as the boys. But yes, that was, I suppose, how it started.
So I'm going to come back to the costume in a minute. In fact, Zee's going to ask you some questions about that. But just continuing a little bit on, I'm imagining the day and the competition going on. Where are the horses and how many are they and what do they do?
Well, the horses, well, certainly nowadays, there's quite a good number. There could be in the high teens, 20 horses, and they're usually matched with a ploughboy. We try and keep it even, and at one time the school roll went down quite a bit, so we were, you know, a wee bit worried that, you know, we would have enough to make a competition. Anyway, they get changed into their outfits. It's now at the local community school. It's got a, you know, a big hall and a few extra bits. So they get changed into their outfits, which it takes quite a bit because there's obviously a lot to put on and it's quite, you know, intricate. So they get changed and they, if we get a nice day, they parade outside onto a grassy mound so that, you know, they're a wee bit higher up and people can see them. We have a piper that leads them out. And if we should get a rainy day, which has been for this last wee while, they have a stage set up in the school. So they're led up onto the stage and there they are judged. We usually try and get somebody who knows what like the heavy horse harness would be. So their categories of judging is for the harness, which is how authentic it is towards what the heavy horse would be, and decoration. So you could have, you know, all spangles and baubles and bells and stuff, and it might not be what somebody wants. So it's purely up to the judge's decision which outfit they like, and then it's judged on how accurate it is to the harness that would be on the horse.
That's really interesting. So you couldn't put sort of a Hollywood type feel to your horse outfit because it wouldn't be authentic and it wouldn't win.
So long as you've got the sort of basics, well, the collar, obviously, with the metal points, if you know, the hems, as they call it, they've got ribbons on it and usually pom-poms, sometimes bells. And then obviously, a human does not stand as a horse, but they do have a belt nowadays, and it's decorated. So that would have been the like the top of the back of the horse that would have had all the, you know, the really beautiful. In fact, we've just seen photographs of the horses that's been down at Ingleston, and there's some really beautiful, beautiful pieces. So, as I say, obviously you cannot imitate them exactly, but it's all, you know, a token to what they would have on the real horse. And the, as I said earlier, on the fringing, the frills, is the round the feet. We've got ankle bits that go around the ankles and the usually black shoes. And there's a little silver bit around the toes to make it look like the horseshoe, you know, so that there's always that little hint of something that's what the horse would look like.
I'm straying into Z's territory, so I'm going to stray back. So once they've paraded on the stage, what then happens to the horses and what happens in the festival?
Well, as I say, if on a good day, the ploughboy leads his horse out into the outside to the public, and the judges are then, you know, judging. And while the horses are being judged, the ploughboys are also being judged with their ploughs as to how well they've kept them over the year. And, you know, best wooden plough, because there are wooden ones and there are metal ones. So there are two categories. So that's going on at the same time as the horses are being judged. So it's all probably a bit, you know, nothing happening for the crowd. So we've got a local band at place. whether it's inside or outside, they're usually quite happy to background music. So it's quite, you know, it's an entertainment. And maybe somebody will take the microphone and just explain what's going on, and just let the folk know what it's all about. So yeah, it's all informative as well.
And then how does the day or the festival end?
Okay, well, once the judging, which doesn't take too long to do the ploughs, the horses, they take a wee bit longer sometimes, but once they've been judged, they will be called forward so that the people there can see the, you know, third, I think, does it go third? Sixth? I think there's 1 to 6, so they get called forward so that, you know, people there know who's got the prize this year. And usually there's a photo opportunity where we have the crowd want to take photos, so they, you know, they maybe have a walk around, but the rest of the photo opportunity, and they're back into the hall to change, so they're back into their normal gear, hang up the outfits once again, and then it's down to the beach. And it's usually a race because there's always time to think about, and it's not going to be very convenient this year either. So it's down to the beach then for the boys to do their serious bit of the whole performance. They've got a bit marked out previously. There's somebody down at the beach that marks out a square, 4 feet square, and they are given numbers before they come down, so they know they just go to that. And it's in 3 categories. There's under 8, ordinary class, and champions. So there's 3 classes as well, and they get, you know, for their number, they draw their number, so you don't know what it's, you know, where you're going to be. And it's also judged the same as what the heavy horse ploughing match would be, and nowadays the tractor. So it's best fearing, best, what else, start and finish, straightest ploughing, and best rig in the field, and just, you know, it's all the same as what the main ploughing events are to this day. So
What was the first one you said there? Best fearing.
Fearing, yeah.
What's a fearing?
It's where you would set up, you know, you've got to make a start. So you'd plough one way, and then you would come back up so that there's a ridge. And then you plough a couple of fur, which is just your strip down on that side, and then work up and down. So you've got to make a start and you've got to make a finish. Now the next person to you, you've got to sort of mesh in with where they have. And they say you always finish on the upward plough. So yes, it's all very serious, and the boys have been doing practicing for probably weeks beforehand.
And so at the end of the day, you've got this section of the beach with these 4-foot squares, and they all the ploughing lines tie up together in one enormous sort of plough line.
Pretty much, yes, yeah. And that's what they would do if they were, you know, ploughing a field, because they obviously want the field ploughed, so you're not going to miss bits. But it is sectioned that the under 8s are kept together, the ordinary class, and then if you win the ordinary class, you then move up to be the champion. So there might be 3 champions in that class. There might not be. But it is in 3 sections. But basically, it's all more or less in a strip. So some years the beach is absolutely perfect, other times it's stony, pebbly and seaweed and the sand isn't where it's supposed to be. But they get 40 minutes to do their plough their square. And after that, the judges come down and they judge. They don't know who's judged it because you're just given this number. So they judge it in the three different categories. And it's taking note. Nobody really knows until the prize giving at night. And they have, usually it's a supper, depending on, you know, different times. We have to work with the tide. Depending on when the tide is, we might have a supper. It might be a lunch. But there's food always involved. And then everybody sits down to get the prizes. Now, everybody gets a prize. And it's also, we have what we call special prizes. So maybe grannies or granddads, aunties, uncles want a little something not too extravagant wrapped up. And you can write a wee poem. It could be that they're moving up to the big school. So there could be a little poem written about the, you know, you're leaving the school and now you're going up to the big school. Or, you know, it's not everybody does it, but it's there. Sometimes there's quite good fun and the humour. If they've been up to some mischief or other, they can, get this written. So, yeah, that's the prize giving then at night where, as I say, everybody gets a prize.
So a couple of questions on that. What is the prize? Is it just, are there some specific prizes or just these little presents that family members might give?
No, they have trophies and medals and cups and shields and usually a little bit of money goes with it and rosettes. It's quite attractive to take part in, I think, once you realise. And then the special prizes are just, you know, little gifts, really. And, a boy could win several, you know, he could have the best start. He might not win the whole thing, but maybe he wins the best start on that day. And he might win overall or, you know, it's just whatever, you know, the judges decide. So he might get a wee bit of pocket money that night.
It sounds like it's a brilliant time for the community to come together.
It is. I mean, I think the prize giving is more sort of family, friends and that kind of thing. I don't think there's so many like people come to see that. But all the results, well, actually, Amy Jane, we take the results and she puts it up on the website that night. So, you know, it's people that, you know, want to know can view it. And usually she has the photos up as well. So, everybody's informed that, you know, wants to know who did that, did he win. And we try and link photos and who won and that kind of thing as well. So, yeah, it's quite a busy day.
It sounds like it. And Amy Jane, we'll come to you in a minute, if you don't mind, and because I know you've been involved yourself. But I'm going to hand over to Z now, Moira, if that's okay.
Yes.
I know she's going to ask you much more about the costumes, and we'll get down to the real detail, because I know you've Amy Jane's worn them, you've been involved with them, and you've actually made them. So I'll hand over now.
Okay.
Hello. So I wanted to ask you about the process of making the costume. Is it something you do individually or does like the whole community come together to make the costumes?
It's absolutely individual to the family. I don't know if you realise, so Amy Jane had an outfit made by someone who actually made and dressed a doll the same. And she sort of said, I would love to make a real one, but it would be a big doll. So I kind of, I might be able to do that. So she had one made very, very professionally. And when she outgrew it, I thought, I could try. But it's actually quite difficult to get the suit, because if you realise you're sewing maybe brooches and different things on, and it's quite heavy. So you need quite a substantial material, like a blazer that's, you know, quite sturdy that you can sew things on. So yeah, that was probably the biggest problem I had in getting the actual base to make the outfit. But I then did decide to try and make one. So yeah, she ended up with two.
You said you mentioned how it's quite difficult to find materials to fit all that ornamentation and stuff. Where do you get your resources from? Is it stuff like you have like on hand, or do you have to like outsource it? Like, what do you do for the costume?
I think the trousers was maybe a charity shop, because we don't sort of so much have the school uniform here that's like a blazer. And sometimes the school uniform blazers are maybe green or whatever, you know, so it tends to be black. Your base is black, but then I think there was one white one that was used. But anyway, once you've got a jacket that's, you know, substantial enough that you can sew these things on, it's just whatever you want to put on them then, and whatever you can get hold of.
Okay. I've seen that. I'm looking at, I have the picture on my screen right now, and there's a lot of like ornamentation and a lot of embroidery. Is it a long process, and is there a meaning behind each of the little ornaments, because they're all very different, and is there some symbolism to them?
Well, some have like medals of some kind on, a commemoration medals, I should say, and it's just whatever you can get. I think, as I say, charity shops was a huge source for, you know, the style earrings, you know, the glittery ones. It's all glen. And it's about whatever you can get. And the local fabric shop that had the braiding and the ribbons, and obviously you make your pom-poms, and the fringing that I used was just from the local shop that you can sell all these things. So it's, you know, just whatever you can get. But it tended to be the, you know, that rick-rack braid that was available, and I think quite a lot of the outfits had that. But I know the first one that Amy Jane had, which was the blue fringing on the collar, the woman was, I think, maybe down in London, and she went to some of the markets there and got some really different sort of braid and that kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, it was just whatever jewellery or anything that you can find that's got a bit of sparkle to it, and then just add on to it.
Okay.
But I think the most difficult bit was the collar, because it's metal underneath it. It's quite, you know, we try to make it as sturdy but as light, because obviously it's quite heavy for the horses to, or the girls, as they are, to stand and wear that. So you had to, well, what I did is I had foam, and then I wrapped the material around the foam and sewed it so that it held it. Then I had something that I could sew things onto. So yeah, that's, it's just, I was lucky that I had a husband that could make the collar for us. But it's just whatever material you get. That's why they're all so different.
As the horses, they are very young girls. Are the like costumes like adjustable in any way? Like, so say they accommodate for when the horses like grow older and grow older. If they don't fit anymore, do you just make a new one, or like just try to adjust the costume in any other way?
Well, I think Imogene's first one that Fran made was quite adjustable. she did consider the growing in it. So, yeah, it's certainly, yeah. I suppose you're limited in the jacket, what you can do. I mean, you tend to get one that's big enough that'll do a few years if possible. But if you outgrow it, there's a fair chance somebody else will have a bigger one that isn't being used. So, I mean, it's like the costumes are then pooled, that, you know, somebody else is using them, so that it's kept going, sort of thing.
Okay. I have a question for Amy Jane, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
You've been doing it from a young age. What was the whole process like for you? Did you take part in making the costumes, or were you just wearing them? What was the whole thing like for you?
I wasn't really making them. Obviously, a child's not going to make things very well. But I started at 4, was it? That was the first year I did it.
Borrowed.
With a borrowed one.
Was it fun for you? What was it like for you? Did you enjoy wearing the costumes? What are your feelings about it?
Yeah, I always liked it. It was good to be involved with, and yeah, I liked
Okay, so Moira, I've looked at the costumes. It's very consistent with the color schemes of black, red, blue, white. Is there a reason behind that?
Well, I suppose it was just the kind of traditional colours was red, white, and blue, but I think our second one has green. And the pom-poms, yeah. But I mean, it was just, not dictated that you had to have them, but just whatever, was takes your fancy, I suppose. But yeah.
I'm going to skew a bit away from the costume for a second. I wanted to ask, we all know about COVID-19 and how it's affected everyone. Has it affected you in any way when it came to like making the costumes and just the festival in general?
It was 3 years that we didn't have it. Obviously, we were locked down and couldn't do it. And then the year I thought the school was back, I thought they probably would, go and, have it again. But there was quite a few folks said, "Oh no, I don't think we should," and that. So yes, it certainly had an impact. Last year would have been the first year again that we did it. So it's, I think, back up in strength, and folks seem to be keen to, take part again at. We try and encourage the ones to do it. I have been known to go to the school and talk to the children and say, "Do you know what it is? And do you know that you can take part?" But as I said, that there's quite a good number in 20 roughly ploughboys and horses. I think last year I can't remember how many, but yeah, it's quite a good number. You need quite a few to make the display. So
Is it a
yeah.
normally bigger number than 20, is it?
It has been down to just teens because the actual school roll dropped. So it was, if there's no children, you can't get them there, sort of thing. But yeah, it's picked up. There's a lot of children at the school. So obviously, it's made a difference to us again that there's more taking part.
Quick question, Maura, that you mentioned earlier about quite a level of competition between the costume makers, yourself and presumably other mums and other costume makers on the island. So when it comes to how long do you spend over the costumes, and is there a sense of competition and wanting to win?
I don't know there is, at least so much nowadays, but it was said that there was a couple of women that were really determined that, their outfit was going to win. It didn't matter about the children, the outfit was going to win. I don't know if I really, because I didn't think when I made the outfit, because I am not a seamstress and I'm not good at that kind of thing, that it would, it was one that you could wear to attend, sort of thing, but it has won prizes and it's done quite well. But I was going to say to Z, if she noticed the socks, it's usually white ankle socks, and there's a little rosette usually, or a ribbon around the legs as well, just because, it's, again, it's a tradition that started. I don't think the horse had ribbons on the legs, but it's, just one of these things that seems to have taken on, and most outfits do.
So actually, that would be a good thing that for you to do for us, Maura, if you wouldn't mind. Starting with the bottom or the top, would you just describe what's typically involved in a costume?
Okay, you might have to keep me right here. As I said, it's black shoes usually, and it's usually got a silver, just the silver paint around the toe with a little peak at the top, which makes it the clip of the horseshoe. Then you would have your ankle strap, which is, well, I think I made mine out of cord, and it's got bells on it. Not like your Morris dancing kit, it's not exclusively bells, but that's just to signify the hair over the hoof of the horse. It's a heavy horse, it has what they call a feather. The socks are usually knee-length white, and most of them have a rosette or ribbons or something on the top. It's shorts, nearly they're nearly all shorts. I don't think there's any long ones, but shorts then, and it just decorated with whatever matches. The whole outfit is a one unit, as it were. So everything sort of matches in design. The jacket, again, is just matching the shorts. You can the same design, same colour, same material. There's a tail. I made mine out of black wool, which took a while. And at the top of it, there's usually a peak, and the Clydesdale horses also have their tails pleated, and they always have this say two points decorated with about a pom pom or bauble or something. That's what the horses have. What's next? The belt, which we would call the back band of the horse. It's decorated, but obviously, as I say, if it was a horse, it would be standing up. You know, the decoration would be over the back. Then I'm thinking the collar, it's the sort of crucial bit. Decorated, it's got the metal points, and we've got pom-poms and ribbons with bells on the end on that. And it's really bonny on a sunny day with a little bit of wind, with it blowing in the breeze and maybe even tinkling a wee bit. So yeah, the collar is got chains on it, which would be the watering chains for a heavy horse. I don't really know all about that, but yeah, the chains link from the collar to the waistband. We've got a little bit of lace inset in the neck. You just put it on like a collar, and that just sort of hides the t-shirt or blouse or anything, and a little bit more ornate. On our one, it's like a hat which has ears on them and blinkers and a bit with the reins coming from the bit and what else is on it? Yeah, we've got ears on our ones. Some of the outfits just have like a bridle, and it's got the blinkers and the bit and everything as well. So there is variations. They're not all identical, but I mean, the, you know, the token's there. So that's, I think, mainly our outfit.
That was brilliant. That was absolutely brilliant. I think you got everything in there. That was absolutely brilliant. Thank you. So, Amy Jane, can I ask you a few more questions? So, I know you were really little when you first were a horse. Can you remember anything of that first occasion?
Well, the first year, I think it was another lass that was like a couple of years older than me. Was we're not quite so sure about getting that year. So I think she was just oh, go take this little lass's hand, go take me hand. But in actual fact, I think I was, you know, tagging her hand.
Yes.
And reassure her. So I was happy enough to go in that year.
Was there a sense of excitement of wanting to join in, because presumably you'd seen your brother be involved and you'd seen the horse?
No, I was after that, but yeah, I was happy enough to go in. Yeah, I was quite happy to, yeah.
And as you went up through the years, was it something that you looked forward to, and you know, it was a great thing to be involved in?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's always a good thing to be a part of, just something to look forward to each year. And
so here's a quite difficult question to answer, but when you put the costume on, what do you feel? What do you feel like?
It's good. You can shake your hands around and jingle and make a noise, which is always entertainment.
Any sense, though, that you are becoming the horse?
Oh, well, yeah, you can obviously pretend to be a horse. Clop a boot and be silly, but yeah.
Find the dyke.
Well, hopefully not. But.
And you've, so the first costume you had was the one that was made for you by the lady who made the doll costume. And then your mum made you one. Mm-hmm. What did you feel about that costume?
It was fine, yeah. It was well made, as good as we can expect. I think it was well sort of accurately, because you put a lot of effort into actually making researching where all the horse brasses would hang and each sort of part, like what would horse historically on the horse would be. So it was accurately represented in that one.
So, were you proud of what your mum had made?
Yeah.
Or surprised?
Yeah, or maybe yes. Yeah, she did a good job.
Well, it sounds like she did, since your mum said she's not a seamstress. Looks pretty good to me. Did do any the, not your costume particularly, did but do bits fall off the costumes sometimes on the festival day?
Quite often something does, obviously, because moving parts and enthusiastic children shaking around. It's
There's usually a sewing kit
yes,
somewhere
and
or safety pins.
usually when you sweep the floor at the end of the evening, some bell or something that's floating about. But it usually gets reunited with somebody if they're missing it, so.
You ask, Z, carry on.
Sorry, Amy Jane, you mentioned that Moira, you did a lot of research for about like where the brass hangs. Like, how did you conduct that research? Like, how did you like look into it?
I think we had books from the library, just on what the like the heavy horse. There is different types of harness. There's like obviously a show harness, and I think different areas in Scotland, because we're obviously sort of based it more on that, have slightly different variations. But we thought, well, they basically have this, and they have the down below the collar at the front, or the like the breast of the horse, it's got
You could show
a heart.
that. Oh yeah, you could. You've got a real one to
Hang
show.
on. That's
Will that be the one at the back of the
the back of
collar?
the collar, probably. And that's a genuine horse brass. And in the outfits that we have, I was actually able to use real bits of horse brass on them. Like on the collar, we have both outfits have a real horse brass on them, so it just sort of made it more authentic, I suppose. But
Yeah, the top bits. They're often real ones.
I was actually lucky that there was a gentleman, an old gentleman, who knew my mother, and he gave me a box of like that posh brass and just a few other bits and bobs. So I thought, right, we'll just use them, and that's genuine then.
Oh, I was going to ask, have you like seen like costumes in the past and like, oh, I'd like you see a, like a part of it, like, oh, I want to incorporate that into my costume and like add to it. Have you done that in the past before?
Well, actually, I have a third costume which somebody made for their daughter, and obviously she's grown out of it, and she was quite willing to lend it, that anybody that needed a costume could use it, and she says, no, I don't want it back. So I've got it here, and I'm sort of adding bits to it, and I wouldn't say improving it, but just changing it slightly, that I mean, I'm putting my take on it, but it's a sort of work in progress. It would do if somebody needed it, but the collar maybe isn't quite so substantial. But I
I think
mean,
it's wooden, is it not?
I don't know. I
Because
think
it
so.
broke, or the cat broke it.
Yeah, and I did,
And you did.
and I did. Yeah,
You and the cat.
the hames, the points that goes up on the collar, they were wooden, and unfortunately, the cat knocked it over. And also I managed to break the points, but I mean, we've glued them back and covered them over, so I don't think it'd be noticeable. But it is probably the only one that I've sort of had that I've done anything different than what was already on it. But I might finish it someday.
So, Amy Jane, I think your mum told me that you took part from the age of about 4 to about 16.
Yes.
So, obviously, it must be a bit different as you get older. And your costume must be a bit different. Wearing it must be a bit different. What was it like when you were a teenager?
Well, I was always kind of a shorter kind of body,
Yeah.
so it's not too bad because sometimes when like the older lasses, well, they get tall, so I think they sort of give up when they start seeing a whole lot of peedy bairns next to them, but didn't bother me. I was happy enough with that.
And so obviously the costumes, you had a couple of new costumes over that time. Did you ever have a favourite?
Well, the first blue one's always nice because it was, well, so different. It was very bright and jingly and very pretty. But, well, they were both fine. I mean, liked them fine, yeah.
We learn lessons this by after having done the first one, the collar. The second one was maybe slightly more streamlined, so it was maybe easier to wear. But the blue one, as we call it, her first one that Fran made, was quite unique. I mean, there was not another one like it, and it kept winning prizes most years. So
it's quite a big collar on that one.
Yeah, yeah. So we were able to streamline the second one a bit more, so it made it a bit easier to wear, I would imagine. Lighter, maybe.
Yeah, because it was quite big and heavy, that one, but
so tell us, sorry to interrupt. Tell us what it is like to wear.
Well, it's fairly fine. I mean, it's shorts and a jacket, really, and so just however you imagine wearing that, but the collar is probably the most different thing, because obviously you're not a horse shape as a human. So,
and you've got the headdress on with often blinkers and things, so that must be a bit odd to wear.
Well, it's different, but it's not uncomfortable or anything. Like, the only main thing's the collar, just because it's got a shape, so it's sort of hangs around your neck a bit tighter. It's a lot of weight to hold on your neck, as it were. So, but it's not too bothersome. It's, you can deal with it, and if it gets something, you can just hold it up a bit, just to relieve the weight for a bit.
Moira, I wanted to ask, for the like elaborate like neck piece, is that like stabilizes it? Like Amy Jane said that you're not a horse shape, so like, is there any like poles or anything to like keep it up? Like, obviously not like hurt the body in any way.
It's tied.
There is a tie at the back of the bottom of the collar to round the back, so that it keeps it, you know, going up over the face or anything. So it does hold it down. Maybe not having worn one, but I know somebody last year, was it, said that it was really hard on the back of their neck. Not this one, but it was another outfit that was made, and they really felt it quite, you know, heavy on the back of the neck. So they think, did they roll up a sponge or something, you know, just to relieve it? Because obviously it's taking a lot of pressure.
It's not a natural position to be
no,
in.
No.
So I wonder if we could ask a few sort of final questions about how the festival is now, all the publicity that you've had recently with the costume coming to the exhibition, and the future. Does it surprise you that people are interested?
Well, I would say this last handful of years, it's, well, bar COVID, there's always been somebody, you know, up and taking photos or something. It was Landward, I think, came up and filmed it 1 year, and it was filmed in 1952 or 54 for the BBC. And last year, our local Radio Orkney wanted to do a then, before and after type thing, and they came out, and the lassie that did it, she did a tremendous job and pieced together like the before and after photos, and it was really, really interesting. So that was also last year, and Simon obviously been up taking photos, and we had the, what was his name, Charles Jeffries, who did his London fashion design kind of on the back of the ideas that he'd seen. And I mean, yeah, which is what whoever wants to come. I said, first of all, it's our event. If you can fit around it, you can come. But we're actually just having one meeting tonight. And obviously, we'll have a lot of updates to give everybody as to how it's all going. And if Simon gets funding, there could be another one next year, I believe. He's looking to do something in London.
Yes, so the Making Mischief exhibition has now been taken down at Compton Verney and it's moving to London, and it will open in, I think it's the spring of 2024. It's slightly different and it'll be changed, and hopefully some of the oral histories will be included to tell the stories behind some of the costumes as well. So it's definitely making its mark on others, not just people in the Orkneys. I wonder what you feel about that, because sometimes when a very local tradition gets kind of taken on board by a more general population, it sort of becomes a bit of a sort of tourist attraction, and you might feel a bit like animals in the zoo rather than it being something that's your community's.
Yeah, sometimes we do almost feel that, but I think we all sort of say it's our event and we're doing it. And as I say, if you can fit around this, you're welcome. I don't know, I haven't, as I say, we're meetings tonight, but somebody was saying that there is a photographer wanting to do photographs. And, you know, I said, well, if he wants to do like individuals, we can probably manage that. But I says on the day, you know, you're welcome to do photographs, because everybody's there knowing that there will be photographs. So, I mean, we don't have any forms to fill in. They just know it's going to happen. So, yeah, it's, I mean, I know years past, before I had any involvement, Anne Peace, who I must mention, has kept it going for a lot of years. She's been quite a stalwart in it. And she said that there was a film crew for China, I think. I mean, I don't know how on earth they came or what they did, but yeah, I mean, it's worldwide. You just maybe don't realise it. But yeah, I think for this last 8 years, there's always been somebody else, you know, there taking what they can from it, if you want to say.
And you've obviously personally taken on some of the organising. You're saying that you were going into the school to encourage the children to take part. So it's become quite a big part of your life?
It's getting bigger. well, I think I only became involved in, because I asked Anne, I says, well, how do you make your money? Because obviously it costs money to, you know, do it, so that they have the obligatory raffle that everybody has to have. And she says, well, it's fine, unless it's a rainy day when there's less people and you're just about break even. So I think I said, why don't you make a video? Because I'd been involved in a children's video just a year or two before. And I says, I know a man that would make a good job of it. So she says, oh, I'll just leave that with you. I says, no, I mean a proper video. I don't just mean somebody standing outside with a video camera. Actually make a proper video. So, well, she said, that maybe be okay. Anyway, I spoke to a few folk. Yeah, they thought that would be fine. We got a properly constituted committee. And they applied for funding, the National Lottery Heritage, because I think it was fitted the bill. So we employed our videographer who had worked with before, and that's why we were doing interviews and, you know, just to add into it. So that's when we made the video. And I says, no, I'm not on the committee. I'll help with this video because I'd done it before. So that was probably my first involvement. And then the secretary that was gave up. So they said, well, you've made the video, now do you want to be the secretary? No. But yes, as you do. But yeah, that's my part in it at the moment. And there's always something else that seems to be taken on. We've got another exhibition, just a little one at the beginning of August. So just a local one. So yeah, there's always that little bit more seems to be happening than whatever used to be, just the event, and that was it, passed for another year. But I think it's all good, and as I say, Anne's says it's always a bit more feather in the hat. Says I think we've got a full Indian headdress now. But yeah, it's good. Yeah, it's good.
I've just got one last question. Z, have you got one as well?
I was just going to ask, because obviously it's gaining a lot more traction online. You see a lot of people getting involved. You see a lot more, like, obviously there's young people involved in the festival itself, but like outside of the community, do you see more young people getting involved, or is it just like maybe like people in the older generation? What do you think?
Well, we don't limit it, but it is like children who live on the island or whose parents or grandparents have taken part in it previously can be a horse or ploughboy. It maybe slightly limits who does get involved, but the older generation, and I mean, I've been around long enough now to see the little boys now with their own family taking part. And I says, it's quite a strong tradition that they feel is, you know, has to be kept going. That, I mean, the real, you know, traditionalists are, yeah, they're happy to see it going. And I mean, on the day, it's lovely. It's a real local thing and everybody's really there for that purpose and helping. I mean, the beach has to be prepared. They have to be, you know, people in charge there. So it's on the day. It's quite a huge thing, but it's good to see it keep on going.
So you really see the community coming together then, do you?
Yes, yeah. And I mean, like I said, we've had tour buses coming especially to see it, and I can't remember who else. I mean, like I said, we just got an email
and
saying
the Queen's been here.
And the Queen, yes, the Queen got that was must have been in the '80s.
The Queen came.
But yes, yeah. Well, she was obviously didn't come specifically, but she was in Orkney, and they had this because obviously a horse connection, I suppose. They had this down on the beach in Kirkwall, so that she could see the whole thing. And well, it was again Anne Peace that was there and met her, and she says she was really interested in it, and she does. And I know the Queen does, you know, does research, and she does ask really good questions, but. She says she was really interested and wanted to know a lot about the horses specifically, and I guess the Duke probably looked more at the boys blowing, but yeah, I mean, that was a special performance, as they would say. Yeah,
amazing. So you've got royal connections and global connections.
Yeah.
My last question was to you both, actually, if you could give this just a minute's thought. What impact would you say your involvement with the Festival of the Horse has had on you?
Well, personally, I think I've got, well, I feel quite a pride in it. And although I was not local as such, I mean, I think I've been here long enough now, and I think I've taken it along and done as much as I can for it. And I think it'll keep going. I mean, it evolves, but it'll, yeah. It'll go, I think, for a lot more years. Don't know if another 100 years, but you never know.
Why not?
Why not?
What about you, Amy Jane?
I don't know.
Well, you've gone through it because you were 4
mm-hmm.
and took part as a horse right till you're 16, and now she's part of the...
I was abducted into the committee one day.
Yes, she happened to be out of walk and said, right, you come in, you're on the committee, sit there. So she's committee as well, and on the day... You know, you can't have too many hands, you know, doing things and organising things. So, yeah, she's there as well. She could take over anytime.
You're the next generation, the next generation coming along. Yeah. Thank you very much, both of you. That was really fascinating. And very glad that we'll be able to keep this record in the archives in Warwickshire.